speak out on Thanksgiving. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Saturday, November 30th, 2019. As we continue to digest the bounty of Thanksgiving, WBAI listeners will, of course, take a moment to consider the destruction wreaked by European civilization on millions of indigenous people. That tragedy is more than ever represented by the false narrative that lies behind the turkey and trimmings. Rather than a dinner among friends, Thanksgiving represented Indians reaching out to help desperate colonists who may not have survived the winter and who would turn brutally on their saviors in years to come. Today, Native people in America, while making advances, are held back by racism, brutality, and the wholesale violation of their human rights. One of the issues that has galvanized Native people since the 1970s is the imprisonment of Lakota activist and member of the American Indian Movement, Leonard Peltier. Lenny Foster of the Diné or Navajo Nation is the former director of the Navajo Nation Corrections Project and spiritual advisor in prison to Leonard Peltier. Foster, who lives in New Mexico, was interviewed by WBAI on a trip to New York on behalf of Freedom for Peltier.
I've known Leonard Peltier since 1970. I met him on the streets of Denver, Colorado. We were young, idealistic, and we both joined the American Indian Movement. I sun danced with him at Crow Dog's Paradise in Rosebud, South Dakota. And I myself had danced 24 years. It was a commitment to our spiritual beliefs and practices. And Leonard did the same thing, and we both joined the American Indian Movement. And the elders and the senior citizens had asked for protection. And Leonard was part of a group from the Northwest, and they came into the reservation. And after Wounded Knee, they proceeded to stay and help with the community, chopping wood, hauling water, planting gardens, and just taking care, ensuring that the elders and senior citizens were protected, because the goons from the Oglala Sioux tribe...
Who were the goon squad?
President Dickie Wilson was an auxiliary police force, and they were just citizens of their tribe, and they proceeded to terrorize the community, just shoot indiscriminately at people who disagreed with the administration or questioned why the traditional people, the elders, the senior citizens were being terrorized, the traditional people who wanted a say in their tribal government proceedings, how the funding for programs were used. It was being misused and abused. There was graft and corruption. So when the Oglala peoples and the elders questioned why this was happening, President Dickie Wilson proceeded to bring forth his goon squad.
Yeah, a lot of people were killed. This wasn't like goon, you think of pushing around and beating up, but it wasn't just that. There was people killed.
Extreme... prejudice, extreme racism against their own people, and these were against people who adhere to the culture, to the ceremonial ways of life, and their traditional lifestyle. It got very, very dangerous.
Culminated with an incident, right? Where?
Well, it finally resulted in a lot of gunfire, and then one day in June 25th, 1975, they had an incident. The federal forces, the FBI, came onto the reservation without any warrant and proceeded to terrorize the community of Oglala, and the young warriors made a stand, and there was an exchange of gunfire, and as a result, two FBI agents who were killed. No one knows who the shooter was. They blamed it on the three oldest men of that camp there, and Leonard Peltier, Dino Butler, and Bob Robidoux were the oldest ones, and Leonard, I believe, was 32 years old, so they picked him out as he was the leader, though he was not the shooter, nor was he even carrying a weapon. But there was false evidence, there was testimony that was false.
Leonard Peltier was one of several people put on trial, others were acquitted. He had basically the same evidence in the same type of case. And yet he was convicted.
Yes, all his constitutional rights were thrown out the door. Constitutional rights were violated. There was evidence that was fabricated, false witnesses, false affidavits. was a complete travesty of the criminal justice system, and yet he remains in prison.
Lenny Foster of the Diné or Navajo Nation is the former spiritual director of the Navajo Nation Corrections Project and spiritual advisor in prison to Leonard Peltier. Peltier released earlier this week a Thanksgiving statement from his prison cell. He wrote the following, we'll not read the whole thing, but in part, the year of 2019 is coming to a close, and with it comes a day most Americans set aside as a day for Thanksgiving. As I let my mind wander behind the steel bars and concrete walls, I try to imagine what the people who live outside the prison gates are doing and what they are thinking. Do they ever think of the indigenous people who were forced from their homelands? Do they understand that with every step they take, no matter the direction, that they are walking on stolen land? Can they imagine, even for 1 minute, what it was like to watch the suffering of the women, the children, and babies, and yes, the sick and elderly, as they were made to keep pushing west in freezing temperatures with little or no food? These were my people, and this was our land. There was a time when we enjoyed freedom and were able to hunt buffalo and gather the foods and sacred medicines. We were able to fish, and we enjoyed the clean, clear water. My people were generous. We shared everything we had, including the knowledge of how to survive the long, harsh winters or the hot, humid summers. We were appreciative of the gifts from our Creator and remembered to give thanks on a daily basis. We had ceremonies and special dances that were a celebration of life. He goes on to say, I want to thank all who are kind enough to remember me and my family in your thoughts and prayers. Thank you for continuing to support and believe in me. There isn't a minute in any day that passes without me hoping that this will be the day I will be granted freedom. I long for the day when I can smell clean, fresh air, when I can feel a gentle breeze in my hair, witness the clouds as their movement hides the sun, and when the moon shines the light on the path to the sacred Inipi. That would truly be a day I could call a day of Thanksgiving. Before Peltier's arrest, the American Indian Movement, or AIM, had made headlines with the 71-day siege by federal forces of an AIM camp at Wounded Knee, South Dakota. At the end of that siege, Lenny Foster says he was called in by Dennis Banks, the group's leader, and presented with a proposition.
When you were at Wounded Knee in 1973 as a young dog soldier, and somebody said, Dennis Banks wants to see you.
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah.
What was that incident?
Well, I was sitting in a bunker, and we were there the whole time. Percy Casper and John Carlson, we were sitting there and then talking about, how are we going to get out of here? Are we going to surrender on May 7th? And we said, no, I'm not surrendering. I'd rather walk out of here. And then just at the same time, Henry Wasik, one of the brothers that were close to Dennis Banks, came to our bunker and they said, hey, DJ wants to see you, Lenny. Me? For what? What did I do? You know, because I really didn't have that contact with the leaders like Russell Means, Dennis Banks, Clyde Belcourt, because we were in the front lines and they were in the command posts back behind the front lines. And then when they say, DJ wants to see you, which is Dennis Banks wants to see you. Oh, what did I do? So I went back there to the log cabin. He was sitting in there. He said, come on in, Lenny. Sit down. You want some coffee? So I said, sure. And he started talking to me about he's been looking at all the warriors that are left in the knee, and then he wants me. He said, I want you to walk out of here. We're not gonna surrender. I said, I'm not surrendering either. So some people made up their mind that they were going to surrender. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Because you surrender, they fingerprint you, they take your picture, and they have you for the rest of your life. So I said, okay, I'll walk out. I'll walk point for you. And we decided to do that. And to make the long story short, we walked out of there that night. And along the way, we encountered the FBI. The federal marshal was with their German Shepherd dog at an owl visit while we were proceeding out past the perimeter, and landed in the tree, and big giant white owl. And I was wondering, God, what that's an omen. And it did that three times as we proceeded out. It was 11 miles journey from Wounded Knee to Porcupine, which was where we had to go to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And it was up and down these hills, and So this all appeared in my path. There was three, because I was walking point. I was about 20 yards ahead of the DJ and the rest of them. So it did that, and it kept going to the east. And I decided to just go ahead and follow him. And there was the road. It was open. There's no road. It was just flat. So we started walking there. I told DJ, we just walk along this road. It's easier than going up and down those hills. And he said, okay. So I let him out of there. And about a mile before we got to Porcupine, there was a car running down below this hill. I went down there to investigate, and I saw there was two FBI agents sitting in the car. They had their car running, and I decided to come back up and say, we got to avoid it. We got to go around. And we started to do that. They turned their lights on, and they saw one of the, there was four of us, or there was four of us and DJ, so there's five of us. They saw one of the brothers that in our group, and they proceeded to call for reinforcements, and they all came. But we went to the tree line away from the road, and we were over this little hill, and they pulled up, and we could hear their cars, the doors opening, slamming. They were talking, and they had a dog. They had a German Shepherd dog. And earlier the day before, we had the swell-out ceremony where we prayed with Crow Dog and Black Elk. And he said he was going to make us invisible when we proceed out of here through that pipe. So we had to believe in that prayer. And we cleansed ourselves, we purified ourselves, we smoked a pipe, and we smudged ourselves with the cedar and the sage. So they can't, the dog couldn't smell us. And so when that dog was out and around, out of nowhere comes these reservation dogs, and they came in there and ran a diversion, got in almost into a fight with the German Shepherd. And these skinny, malnourished reservation dogs came into our rescue, and it allowed us a split second to get away, and we got away. And within a couple hours, the sun came up. We had made our escape.
Wow.
And we didn't, those dogs, the FBI, they never knew who it was. And we got away because of our spirituality, because of our ceremonial beliefs, the pipe and the sweat lodge, Crow Dog and Black Elk.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah, and that was intense, very intense. It was a very serious moment, and we got away. And I didn't tell that story for many, many years. Like I say, we just...
And Lenny Foster is a Diné or Navajo prison activist and spiritual advisor in prison to Leonard Peltier.
The national anthem song of the American Indian Movement.
The Wounded Knee occupation opened up a period of strife on the reservation in Pine Ridge in South Dakota that would make history. And you're listening to the news on WBAI, listener-sponsored, locally produced, and independent radio in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. And to a growing number of Americans and people throughout the world, Thanksgiving has become more associated with the American form of colonialism known as manifest destiny, the idea that Americans are destined by God to spread throughout the continent, displacing the original inhabitants for the so-called superior culture of Europe. Leona Morgan is co-founder of the Nuclear Issues Study Group and Diné or Navajo community organizer and leader advocating from communities in New Mexico impacted by uranium mining. She says the use of New Mexico as a center for uranium mining in the past and for radioactive waste sites in the present is what she calls nuclear colonialism.
The big fight right now is to get people to understand the reality of this situation of nuclear waste in the United States. Other countries are doing the same thing where they're trying to rush to deal with this problem that they've been creating for decades that there really is no good solution for. And that's where to store high-level nuclear waste or fuel from reactors. And so this is what I've been focusing on next week. I'm actually going to Madrid to also do education on this issue as it relates to climate, because next week is the United Nations meeting on climate. And it was supposed to be in Santiago, Chile, but they moved it to Madrid. And so right now, one of the biggest problems internationally is this push for nuclear as clean or renewable power, which it is not, and it's not a solution to climate change. So that's another thing I'm doing that came out of that work, fighting uranium mines back in.
What effect this has had on Native people, and maybe relate that a little bit to this colonialism that's represented by Thanksgiving?
I do a lot of presentations about nuclear colonialism, and I think people are still waking up to the fact that Thanksgiving was not a day. It's not portrayed in any kind of reality when, you know, as children. For me personally, you know, when I went to school, we didn't learn about the real history that happened. And so when we talk about Thanksgiving and some of these other national holidays, and you look back at the origin, and I think one of the most important things that people can do anywhere is to understand whose land they're on. And so, I mean, we never had Thanksgiving before colonization. This is not, you know, a traditional holiday for indigenous peoples, but it's very symbolic, I think, when I do my presentations on nuclear colonialism, is to, you know, look at any of these days, like Thanksgiving, for example, and all of the lies that were perpetuated to, you know, commit genocide against our peoples. And then also today, when we're talking about nuclear colonialism, it's the same thing. Uranium contamination and poisoning of our people today, it's still happening. When people have to move away from their homes because of contamination, it's not unlike the relocation that occurred, you know, when the United States was stealing our land and, you know, legalizing the theft of our land and also creating laws for mining companies to, well, back then it wasn't companies, it was just people, white settlers going west, you know, to fulfill this idea of manifest destiny. It's the same thing when you look at the nuclear industry. They want to take our minerals and they use them and spread radiation all over the world. And, you know, the health impacts don't discriminate against anyone, but they are more impactful against women and children. So these are some of the issues we're left with today. There's a lot of health problems here. We have a lot of issues dealing with contamination from the past. And like I said, it's the same idea of this colonization, you know, taking ownership, trying to capitalize on these things that we as indigenous people never used as commodities to begin with. You know, they were always a part of the Mother Earth that we all love and live on and, you know, work to protect. And this is something that's it's very hurtful when you think about the issues related to nuclear contamination, radioactive contamination, and nuclear colonialism. And so, yeah, that's just something I think your listeners should understand. There's a lot of things people could do. And so right now, I said we're fighting Holtec. And if your listeners could help out, this is something I know as white settlers trying to, you know, they want to support and want to help out what's happening out here. One easy way is to talk to your legislators in Congress about nuclear waste, and that it's not okay to be pushing nuclear waste from the coast to these highly densely populated areas to our communities in the rural West. So these two proposals are also examples of that same colonization that I spoke of earlier. And I think the most important thing is we're looking at some bills in Congress. Folks can go to these websites. There's NIRS.org, NuclearInformationResourceService.org, and BeyondNuclear.org. They both have a lot of information on nuclear waste. You can just click on the tab. And one of your representatives in Congress actually has a lot of power. Nita Lowy, being part of the Appropriations Committee and the chair, of course, you know, is, I think, a very important person for your listeners to call and talk to. And ask not to fund bills and budgets that have money that's for consolidated interim storage or, you know, these waste dumps you're trying to build out here.
Leona Morgan is co-founder of the Nuclear Issues Study Group and a Dena or Navajo community organizer and leading advocate for communities in New Mexico impacted by uranium mining. And the U.S. Special Envoy to Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, said at a news conference last week that Venezuela and Cuba have been interfering and causing problems leading to protests against authoritarian regimes throughout South America.
Clear from the public record that Cuba and Venezuela did a lot of broadcasting, tweeting, speaking in an effort to exacerbate the problems that have existed in the last, let's say, month or so in a number of South American countries. That's obvious. And there is some evidence. You cite, for example, the expulsions. We know of other cases where people were arrested. There was a case in Bolivia with $100,000 in cash, Cubans. So there is evidence beginning to build of an effort by the regimes in Cuba and Venezuela to exacerbate problems in South America.
But William Camacaro, a WBAI radio host and Venezuelan activist in New York, says Abrams is just not telling the truth.
It's not true that Venezuela is interfering in any nation in South America. The only country, as usual, that has been interfering in every internal issue in each country and the entire continent is United States. United States is behind the coup d'etat against Bolivia. United States also was behind the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff and their cancellation of Lula da Silva in Brazil. United States also has been involved in every country and that has been fighting for freedom and liberty in South America. Even the states during the protests in Ecuador, when a lot of people were demonstrating in the cities in Ecuador, United States was behind supporting the president of Ecuador, the right-wing president of Ecuador, to try to control the demonstration and the protest in the entire country. In fact, they are behind President Lenin Moreno, and they have been supporting him to control all the demonstrations that have been taking place in Ecuador, and to implement and also to put in place a system of repression against those people that are protesting in the streets. And the same thing happening in Bolivia, the same thing happening in Colombia, the same thing happening in Chile, because United States has been imposing a system that is it's a system that creates inequality in the entire continent. United States has been behind the all neoliberal policies in the entire continent. And for that reason, most of the country right now, most of the people in the entire continent, South America, are right now demonstrating in the streets.
And Camacaro says Venezuela has been so far spared the worst from the U.S. because President Trump has proved himself to be incompetent.
Donald Trump is extremely clumsy. He's not a politician. I think that someone like Hillary Clinton or Obama, you know, were more successful in this situation trying to overthrow of Venezuelan government or the government on the or change the entire political spectrum in South America. In fact, the one that was very successful in changing the entire political system in the entire South American country was Obama, because he was behind the coup d'etat against Honduras. He was behind the impeachment of the soft coup against the president of Uruguay, of Paraguay, Lugo, the Catholic priest that was the president of Paraguay. He was behind also the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff. He was behind the encarceration of Lula da Silva. And he was behind the election that Macri, the ultra-right-wing president of Argentina, won a few years ago. So, Obama has been the most successful right-wing president of the United States. He was the president that incarcerated more people, more immigrant people, that deported more people in the United States. Not only that, he was the president that started to put children in the jail, incarcerate children. So Trump, he has been fighting with the entire planet. He has a problem with China, problem with Russia, problem with Europe. He has been fighting also with some key allies, Germany. He has been fighting the entire allies of United States, and that's creating a lot of problems for United States to implement any foreign policy.
William Camacaro is a WBAI radio host and Venezuelan activist in New York. And finally, mass protests, a last-minute venue change, and talk of climate tipping points are adding some unplanned drama to this year's international talks on tackling global warming. Delegates from almost 200 countries had hoped to put the finishing touches to the rules governing the 2015 Paris Accord, ironing out a few wrinkles left over from last year's conference in Poland and setting the scene for a major review of their efforts in 2020. But then Brazil pulled its offer of hosting the talks, and stand-in Chile, rattled by anti-government protests, canceled 5 weeks before the meeting. Next, President Donald Trump served formal notice that the United States was quitting the Paris Accord, delivering a symbolic blow to one of his predecessor's signature achievements. And scientists, well, they didn't have any good news either. Study after study published in recent months has underscored the rapid pace of global warming and the need to urgently cut emissions of greenhouse gases. And one more story. The people of Barbados celebrate the 53rd anniversary of their country's political independence from the United Kingdom on November 30th with colorful parades, musical spectacles, and other events. And that's some of the news for Saturday, November 30th, 2019. The news was engineered by James Irsay from the studios of listener-sponsored, locally produced, and independent WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo.
Coming up at 6:30 on WBAI, we have On Contact with Chris Hedges.